Chapter 24. Chris. They'd forced Ollie out of the scorpion. Mesmon in particular would remember exactly how she could use it. Solis went to help her, and the specialist gave her a look as though she'd actually bite if the Partheni came close. It was left to Chris and Kit to get her into the walker frame, under the increasingly impatient gaze of the Tothiat. That done, Mesmon looked at the inert scorpion.
"I am having that," he said, meeting Ollie's murderous, impotent glower. "I have a fondness for trophies, something to remember you by."
He leant in close to her.
"After I've returned certain favours."
"All the way back to Terracuma, is it?" Chris asked bleakly. Mesmon's expression was mocking.
"Oh, stupid bitch," he told her, "who doesn't understand just how personally the unspeakable razor takes all of this. Believe me, it is a matter that has pierced within the shell."
Translated from the Essiel, no doubt, but the meaning was quite clear enough.
"You are all cordially invited to your own fucking executions, and my lord and master will watch."
They were prodded out of the drone bay, down an umbilical, and onto the hegemonic ship. The gravitic mismatch set them stumbling as the Harvest pulled off at around 45 degrees to the Vulture. Mesmon was watching, and Chris guessed he'd been hoping for someone to faceplant. Experienced spacers wouldn't be caught by simple gravity tricks. She felt obscurely proud at how well they were all handling their impending demise. Then Trine's bad leg folded underneath them, and they ended up measuring their full length down the nacreous substance of the docking bay floor. Chris helped them up, looking daggers at Mesmon's people. Delegate Trine sighed, and their nest of arms made a disdainful little gesture, as though brushing dust off imaginary robes.
"Thank you, fellow condemned. Good to see that politeness is not dead."
One of Mesmon's people brought up the rear, and Chris saw he held the unassuming grey case, which had been hidden in the wreck of the Amaru. Aklu was reclaiming his precious regalia, whilst exacting his revenge on those who made off with them. The interior of the Broken Harvest was a curious piece of engineering. In a human-built ship, tightly stacked rooms would take up all the space not occupied by machinery. Here were branching round-section tunnels, shafts heading off at odd angles that suggested the A-grav wasn't always pointed in the same direction. Everything seemed to be made of mother-of-pearl, gleaming white with a rainbow sheen. Golden geometric traceries bloomed at random points, extended and flourished, then atrophied and died, even as Chris watched, reabsorbed back into the matrix of the walls. Messages, warnings or readouts, or just art? Impossible to know. Then they were half walking, half skidding down a slope, entering a room shaped like a flattened oval with scalloped edges. More armed men clustered here, with a couple of the humanoid Castigar that Chris remembered. She also noted Heramon, the Tothiat woman, wearing a robe thrown over a light armour coat. The sunburst figure that was Aklu's heraldry was displayed on her chest, and the back was slit so her lobstery passenger could take the air. The unspeakable itself was at the room's centre, still set into its ornamented A-grav couch. It remained a figure of awe, just this side of supernatural. "It's just a barnacle," Chris wanted to yell at the gunmen. "Just a whelk with delusions of grandeur." And yet, stood before the gaze of those stalked red eyes. It was more than that. She had no idea how the Essiel had claimed so much of the known galaxy, but for sure they had something up their notional sleeves. The prancing Hiver Major Domo stood beside the throne, as fancy as ever. Their two-faced head was turned to suggest the next few moments would involve more tragedy than comedy. Within their latticed body, insect-like elements chased one another around its core.
"Have you redeemed yourself, my wayward son?"
their bell tones chimed, as they took a bird-like step towards Mesmon.
"Or have your failures bowed your borrowed back, so that you lose all use to the unspeakable?"
"See for yourself,"
Mesmon growled, plainly not fond of being the butt of the thing's odd wit. He gave an angry gesture, and the man with the case marched forward, presenting it for the Hiver's inspection. The creature made no attempt to open the case, but their head tilted a little, as though listening. On its floating throne, Aklu made a flurry of sharp gestures.
"Oh, Mesmon, once again, you disappoint."
The Hiver took a step sideways, arms unfolding a pair at a time into a whole family of open-handed poses. The man who'd carried the case fell sideways, and a gout of blood shot along the iridescent floor. It didn't pool or flow in any one direction, but separated out into individual tendrils, forming curlicues and arabesques of dark red. Chris blinked. She'd not even seen the Hiver with a blade, but one of those formal gestures had signified murder. The case fell from nerveless hands and broke open when it hit the floor. It was empty. Mesmon let out a grunt. It was a remarkably small sound, really, to contain the vast amount of rage visible on his face. Then he was lunging for them, and Chris knew he was going to rip someone's head off their shoulders, and that was just for starters. Solace tried to get in his way, and took an elbow to the temple that sent her tumbling aside. Even as she fell, Ollie rammed her walking frame into Mesmon's groin. It didn't seem to inconvenience him much. Apparently those parts were as resilient as all the rest of him. With a snarl of frustration, he reached down and just picked up the entire frame, its legs kicking madly, about to dash Ollie and her conveyance to pieces on the floor.
"Hold," the Hiver said. "Stay your hand."
They had taken one more step, and Aklu's couch shifted too, the Essiel's several eyes craning.
"It may well come to pass," the Hiver continued carefully, as though working extra hard to translate the gestures and rumbles of their master, "that we shall have our fill of broken bones, that truth must be extracted from these few, like corks from bottles. In we drive the point, and out the rush of ruptured fluid comes. Not yet, not this one, cousin that she is. The hook admires her."
Mesmon replaced Ollie and stepped back. His expression suggested his bloodlust was undiminished. For her part, the specialist looked more alarmed at Aklu's forbearance than at the violence. Cousin!
"The wreck of the Umaru is not here," the Hiver told. "Our sacred relics likewise are astray. To take the knot of any of their lives and pull it taut might be to cut the string that leads us to our treasure, might it not? They shall give up the one who knows, and know that if they fail, then we shall start with toes, with fingers, faces, eyes, and all the parts a man may part with long before he dies.
One of the gilded thing's gestures apparently included a command, because the guards were closing in. Mesmon's purpling face hovered around the outskirts, as though he wouldn't trust himself to stay his hand if within arm's reach of them again. Then, a grinding rumble came from the throne, like the shifting of tectonic plates. Everyone froze, glancing at the golden hiver for translation. The majordomo took a half step back. Six arms made an elaborate genuflection that indicated Ollie, Aklu, and the space between them.
"Approach," it intoned. "O favoured one."
Ollie sent Chris a wild look, but all eyes were on her. She manoeuvred the walker frame, stepping cautiously out of the ring of thugs, until she was level with the hiver. Aklu's eyes twitched and shifted position, examining her as its pipe-thin arms flicked and flurried.
"You we will save till last," the majordomo said softly, barely audible to Chris, "for we approve of those born bound who yet refuse to be."
Ollie swallowed and nodded, leaning back in her frame as she stared up at the unspeakable. She was stared at in turn. Then it was evidently time to go. And while the guards laid hands on everyone else, Ollie got to walk unescorted. Chris wondered, in fact, what would have happened if she'd just stayed in the throne room. Had the whole thing been a veiled attempt at recruitment? She'd been expecting to be dumped in the hold, but the Broken Harvest apparently took prisoners often enough to have dedicated facilities. These were spherical rooms budding off a central hub at different angles and heights, a bunch of grapes in negative. The captives were prodded into a cluster of adjoining cells sealed with energy barriers. Solace first, then Chris, Kit, and Trine. Finally, Ollie was allowed to choose her residence of the moment, still being treated with baffled respect by the guards. As soon as Aklu's people had gone, she burst out,
"I'm not a hegemonic or a gangster. I'm not their plant."
"Nobody thinks you are," Chris said, although she'd had a moment's unworthy suspicion.
"I don't know what they want from me," Ollie went on, sounding almost frantic. "These fucking Essiel are crazy. And this one's crazy even for an Essiel, right?"
"Wait," Solace snapped. Ollie glowered at her, though not without a touch of gratitude for having something comprehensible on which to focus her ire. "Trine," the Partheni went on. "Static."
"Ugh,"
the Hiver archaeologist said, a buzzing grunt from within their casing.
"Really?
Just do it." Trine's face displayed a burlesque of petulance as they started putting out a sound like a dentist's drill at the very edge of hearing. Chris's teeth twinged at the sound, more the feel of it. Ollie doubtless wanted to make some caustic comment about things being bad enough already, but she was a professional at heart.
"Blocker?"
she asked cautiously.
"My fellow incarcerates, electronic listening devices are now having a very bad day."
Trine's voice rose like clashing music from within that tooth-jarring sound.
"Pass comment upon our captors all you wish."
"What do we say about Idris?" Chris put in quickly. "Ollie, you're not with them, fine, we get that. But Idris, he's still on the Vulture, unless they brought him out separately. What if they jettison the ship or something?"
"On the other hand, if they don't know he's there, maybe that'll work for us," Ollie suggested.
"Rescue mounted by Idris Resurgent?" Kit piped up.
His screens were grey, fuzzing with vague patterns that seemed to echo Trine's low buzz. Unconvincing. Further priorities are suggested. Where are the coveted objects now, please? Ah, the things. Yes, Chris agreed. Despite Trine's alleged cover, speaking of the originator regalia openly still seemed difficult. They'll be searching the vulture from top to bottom right now, I guess. They'll find Idris anyway. Great consideration towards the potency of such objects removed from their resting place. Is that not the point? Kit pressed. Fuck, he's right, Ollie agreed. You can't just pocket the damn things. So did they just fall out of the crate or something? Who had them last? One by one, they all ended up looking at Trine.
Analysis continues. Kindly remove such accusatory expressions from your faces, my fellow stalwarts, old friends and new, the hiver said.
Trine? Solis said warningly.
I cannot imagine under what circumstances this suspicion has come to fall on me, they protested.
Wait!
Ollie looked between them.
You were stealing the things. Like, from us.
That is an entirely unwarranted suggestion, Trine said weakly. However, someone must think of the benefit to science of such irreplaceable objects. They must not simply be sold to the highest bidder. Fellow cognoscenti, I am sure you appreciate this.
From their expressions, nobody seemed to appreciate it, not even Solis.
Objects where, precisely? Elaborate, please, Kit asked urgently. Life-death level of import hangs on this.
Science demurs, Trine told them flatly.
Science will not stop them from taking you from your frame and murdering you piece by piece, Solis snapped. Trine, will you just...
The hiver pointedly turned their face off and stopped the juddering hum. Presumably this made any further conversation vulnerable to outside surveillance. Everyone lapsed into silence. They heard movement, on and off. The business of the ship going on about them. Even gangsters needed maintenance crews and duty rosters, Chris supposed. But every sound raised the spectre of Mesmon and the guards coming to haul them all out, or maybe just one of them, never to be seen again. If Solis was expecting some grand Partheni cavalry charge, that didn't seem to be happening. The harvest hadn't dropped back into unspace and tortured them all that way. That was the only positive. Presumably, Aklu wanted to secure his toys first. Then, they had a visitor. She heard the sound of sandals scuffing at the rounded floors and straightened up, hissing at the others. Someone came into their suite of cells, garbed in bright red and purple. Chris had to blink at this vision in hegemonic livery a few times before quite accepting he was there. It was Sathiel, the hierograve from Lungcrow, just as mild and avuncular as before. A handful of cultists clustered at the doorway, possibly keeping Aklu's people out and giving their leader privacy, unless...
You were working with it all this time, she demanded. You and Aklu.
Sathiel shook his head.
I'm afraid not, or we would be meeting in more comfortable circumstances. When your captain and I made our contract to free the Amaru and your ship, I had no idea the unspeakable was involved. My people died too when the hook stole the vulture.
He sighed, shaking his head.
It's all very distressing.
How are you even here? Ollie demanded.
The others were just watching, waiting to see whether this might be their break somehow,
A diplomatic courtesy, Sathiel explained. The hegemony has many formalities that may seem curious to outsiders.
But Aklu isn't in the hegemony anymore, right? It's gone rogue. Isn't that the point of the whole unspeakable razor thing?
The specialist pressed.
Ah, well, said Sathiel, and Chris knew a lecturing tone when she heard one. The mistake is to characterise hegemonic systems as if they were human ones. The Essial have been ruling a vast and diverse empire for centuries. They have persisted because they have a system for everything. That is how they work. They prefer not to have to react. Instead, they foresee. This applies even to aberrations within their own species. Perhaps some of you are students of religion.
Among other things, Trine put in, sounding mulish. Who is this Greybeard, and what relevance has he to our predicament?
Many religions have an antagonistic figure, a devil or perhaps a whole class of demons whose job it is to tempt and torment us poor mortals, Sathiel explained, speaking over Trine. And yet, these adversaries remain part of the system they mock. They act as an example of what not to do, a foil to higher powers. As such, Aklu has a place within the hegemonic firmament. So when the razor and the hook comes to a system, it announces its arrival to any hegemonic presence there, which in this case is myself, here to represent my masters in the negotiations regarding the architect's return.
You've gone up in the world then, Chris noted acidly.
A sign of the times, Sathiel agreed. However, all to your benefit, as I may be able to help. Under normal circumstances, your position here would be bleak. You've taken something belonging to the unspeakable. Examples would be made. But perhaps I can intercede as one part of the hegemonic system to another, for old time's sake. You'd have to return the regalia, obviously.
Obviously, said Chris, with a venomous look at Trine, who contrived not to notice her.
Specify your rates and remuneration, please, Kit piped up.
Ah, well.
Sathiel spread his hands benevolently.
As you might imagine, what should be talks focused on the architect's return have degenerated. The Council of Human Interests and the Parthenon are engaged in mutual finger-pointing.
He sighed. We need something to refocus them on the truly important things.
You want the Amaru, Chris divined.
I'm sure you've done the sensible thing and hidden it, Sathiel said. A very wise precaution. However, if it was retrieved by my people and displayed above Berlenhof, the great powers might just abandon their brinkmanship. Then we can start dealing with the key issues at stake.
And that's your price for putting your word in? Ollie asked.
I regret the necessity of being so mercenary, but yes, Sathiel agreed. Millions, billions of lives are at stake. And I have a sacred duty.
We'll think about it,
the specialist said.
Ollie, Chris started.
I said, we'll think about it. Discuss it, maybe. Free and frank exchange of views.
Sathiel sighed.
I will be called before Aklu shortly to reaffirm the disdain and rejection of the hegemony towards the unspeakable, he said. There are proper diplomatic and ceremonial forms to these things, you understand. I will suggest you be brought out to witness this, and then most likely Aklu will make a start on you. You are aware, of course, that a great deal of Esiel cultural form is coloured by their early contact with the architects, by which I mean that the proper behaviour of the unspeakable is to make ruin an art form. Please, let me help you.
We'll think about it, Ollie repeated firmly,
and just stared at the man until he'd taken his cultists and gone. Well, we could do worse, Chris said, after Trine had reluctantly reinstated their jamming field.
Question as regards the credibility of his contractual consideration, Kit's translator spat emphatically.
Yeah, I reckon all the help we get from that quarter is a little hand-wringing and a...
Well, I asked him not to talk to you, but...
Ollie agreed. We keep all our leverage close and...
But she didn't have an and. Not really.
Excuse me, but can someone at least explain to me who that even was?
Trine complained. Chris gave them the potted history, including the architected Amaru, the vulture being taken at Lungcrow, and their first clash with the Broken Harvest. At the end of it, Trine's phantom face was staring at all of them simultaneously with an expression of exasperation.
You needed me a long time ago, my companions in adversity.
We need you to tell us where the things are, Ollie growled, or I will use whatever weird-ass influence I have with Hook to have him do you first and make it slow.
Trine manufactured a vast sigh.
If it comes to threats, my somewhat obstreperous cellmates, then know that sometimes the greatest treasures are to be found within oneself.
Chris blinked. Seriously? She stared at the hiver's barrel body. And they're still potent. You cracked the containment system.
Not exactly. I simply discovered that it was independent of the casing, Trine admitted. But if it comes to blood, I will give these things up, despite the loss to science, in the hope it will soften the blow. Although you were the ones who robbed an SEL gangster of a priceless treasure. So I don't feel this is on my head.
Soon after that, they were back in Aklu's presence. True to his word, Sathiel had driven a wedge of cultists into the heart of the court. They were standing there, robes bright and regal, as though they'd turned up for a party everyone else had heard was cancelled. Aklu's people didn't seem to know quite what to make of the interlopers. The pack of thugs and heavies were probably not connoisseurs of hegemonic theology. However, they were keen weather vanes for the mood of their boss, and the SEL seemed to accept the cultists with equanimity, like some kind of ineffectual judgment on its ways. The gilded hiver spread their many arms towards the crew in a gesture that eloquently conveyed, "Well?" Chris glanced at her companions, because now they did know the location of the regalia. For a fragile moment, they retained a defiant camaraderie. Then, Hermon appeared, pushing a simple 6x4 scaffold with obvious bindings for wrists and ankles, and a whole host of hooks and pins on jointed arms. You couldn't have said for definite how those arms might be deployed,
but they gave the imagination plenty to chew on. Chris looked to Solace, whose face was set in a stubborn expression. She was determined not to betray her companions to anyone else. Ollie was being bloody-minded too, and probably Kit had worked out that a Hanny wouldn't fit on that frame. It was a nastiness designed for a human physique. "Damn it," she muttered, because apparently it came down to her. But then Trine stepped forward. Despite their oft-repaired leg, they managed a halfway decent parody of the Major Domo's elegant dance.
"I would," how does this go? "I would address the most unspeakable from my position here of abject dread. How's that? Does that work?"
Their fake face beamed genially at all and sundry.
"Show first the relics," the majordomo cautioned. "Gladly shall I so."
And Trine's torso just folded outwards. Within the hollow canister of Trine's body, a honeycomb hosted a seething nest of thumb-sized insects. Slotted in front of them were the precious originator regalia. The rods and fragments hovered there, without obvious support, as though they were visuals projected from some hidden lens. Despite her life being on the line, Chris still found herself wondering, how? Where does the power come from? For the Agrav? She hoped Trine knew, because those relics would become trash in a blink if they lost their mystical provenance. Trine's arms spread out, and the regalia drifted out from the confines of their body. All eyes tracked the fragments as they danced in the air above their many hands.
"Behold the treasure of an elder age," the archaeologist murmured. "May I now speak? Four sentences pronounced."
A deep, pained sound ground out from Aklu, but apparently it was positive, because the majordomo said,
"Be brief." "Whoever would think such enemies would cozy up,"
Trine declared, in rough mimicry of the other hiver's rhythms. Their nest of arms spread and curled inwards, perhaps conveying something cutting to an Essiel, save that it brought the relics closer to their open body again.
"Who'd think to find such daggers sheathed that formerly had been drawn?" Or something like that.
They abandoned the pose and forced meter for a moment, rolling ghostly eyes at all the room, as though mortally embarrassed.
"Or I mistake myself, but these robed dallards set themselves against your divine majesty."
The room was very quiet when he'd finished, and he gurned at them all.
"Did I not do it right? Well, excuse me, oh my captors, but that's the best you'll get from me. They are enemies, is my meaning. The clown with the beard and his robed loons."
Sathiel sighed. "You misunderstand, my friend. We are foes, yes, but on an abstract, philosophical level."
"No, I'm talking about the Umaru. That was the name of the ship, wasn't it? Old Hieragrave, old sect captain."
Trine swung back to face the Essiel.
"For lo, the vessel upon which you had placed your treasures, all secured against the world, has foundered. Who'd have thunk it'd go that way?"
Nobody seemed to know what was going on. Mesmon was obviously waiting for the signal to shut the hiver up, but Aklu just watched, fidgeting, without giving any apparent order. The majordomo paused, then pulled their limbs in, steepling all six hands together.
"The architect of our misfortune came,"
they tried, a questioning tone to their golden voice.
I can't be bothered with all this nonsense talk, Trine snapped. Just tell your boss I am the foremost expert of the age. Or rather, I am the greatest scholar on originator law this side of the hegemonic sphere. And I used to analyse architected wreckage for the war effort. Tell it that. I've gone over pieces of your Umaru, and I can tell you this for free. It wasn't architected.
You fucking what?
Ollie barked out, wide-eyed.
No, architect, Trine declared. Someone mangled it with a gravitic drive and a complex program. The subatomic signature you'd expect is completely absent. This was someone's shoddy forgery. Someone who had no idea what the freighter contained. Because, let's face it, the one thing we do know about architects is that they won't go near originator gubbins. Whoever perpetrated this little scam must have been hoping for unquestioning panic at the return of the bad times, so they would surely have picked another ship to ruin if they'd known. Isn't that the case, Menhir Hieroglyph Sathiel?
And their rack of arms made a rippling gesture towards Sathiel.
You're accusing me?
The cultist demanded. And Chris read his expression of outrage and knew for certain that Trine had landed it.
It all makes sense, doesn't it? She spoke up. You were the one desperate to get the Umaru into the public arena. You probably told station admin about the missing ship. Then, when they hid the Umaru, you manipulated us to break it out into the open.
What were you trying to do? Get the colonies falling over each other to sign up with your masters? And was that the hegemony's idea? Or just yours? Just a way of scoring points with your bosses? Sathiel's face was completely composed now. For a moment, the whole universe seemed to be hanging on his response. In the end, all he said was,
This doesn't need to change anything. Excuse me?
Chris felt outraged beyond all reason. You're not even pretending you weren't behind this?
Why do you care?
Sathiel asked, maddeningly nonchalant still.
Surely whether worlds join the hegemony or not is a little beyond your usual level of engagement with the universe. I've heard you talk, you and yours. You're not nativists or even colonial loyalists. I'll intervene on your behalf here in return for the wreck's location. That offer still stands, and it's all that matters to you, surely. Let the politics take care of itself. Joining the hegemony is for the best, you know. You haven't lived under their rule. Peace, harmony, a place for everyone. Nobody goes hungry or cold. It's better.
Except for the Umaru's crew, right? Ollie demanded. I guess you just had to murder them all. Or they might have mentioned something inconvenient next time they made port.
Listen to me, Sathiel insisted. This can still go very well for you. When you're clear of Berlinhof, I'll make sure you want for nothing. You do remember that you're for hire, yes?
Chris said slowly. For a mad moment, she'd imagined a triumphal confrontation with malefactors brought to justice, like an old Earth murder story. But the only authority here was a criminal alien, and why would it care? Solace took two steps, ending up standing protectively by Chris and Kittering.
You intervene?
The clear voice of Aklu's Hiver rang into the silence.
There are no words for those who meddle with the corpus of the gods. Such hubris!
For a moment, nobody seemed to understand what the proclamation meant. Then Sathiel's calm facade cracked.
Unspeakable! Razor and hook! There was never any intent to act against you. I merely sought to advance the agenda of the Aesir, an action in everyone's best interests.
His eyes swiveled to the prisoners, as though to recruit them as allies. Ready yourself, Solis murmured in Chris's ear, making her shiver. Then the whole ship shuddered around them. A low moaning seemed to issue from all the white walls at once, gleaming patterns chasing each other back and forth in shifting hues. Chris just stood there dumbly, but Aklu's people were abruptly in motion. Heramon was shouting orders, and the bulk of the pirate court abruptly dashed out of every available exit. Somewhere on the ship, a musical voice was announcing an alert in perfect couplets. The ship was under attack, Chris realized numbly. There was a shuddering detonation, and she felt the distinct shift to the air that meant a breach somewhere. Boarding? Almost immediately, the sound of weapons fire came to them. The high, searing song of accelerators, the rattle and bang of projectile guns. Someone was crashing Aklu's court with extreme prejudice.